What's up, everyone? And welcome back to an episode of Darknet Discussions. I know it's been forever and a day. That was definitely totally my fault. I accept responsibility for that. Roach is trying to kick me in the ass the whole time and tell me, hey, man, are we going to record this week? We're going to record this week. And it was just like crazy amount of stuff happening back to back to back. And yeah, so totally on me, but it's good to talk to you again, Roach. How you been, man?
Good, man. Just hanging in there. Finally glad we're on here.
So I want to get to user comments first, but we have actually a couple really crazy articles that you wrote that I definitely want to address before the end of the show in regards to various things that have been happening. Without further ado, I think the first thing we'll go ahead and do is jump into the comments if you're up for it.
Yeah, let's get into it.
So the first one that we have is says regarding exit scams, I think a kill switch would be neat. Like you need to input a code or so ever 24 hours or the site's wallet refunds your funds to your wallet. But I don't know, just a thought. What are your thoughts on that, Roach?
I think they've tried that. And then, I mean, kill switches would be kind of crazy because what if you get hung up and you can't get to the servers to do it and everything gets blown away? Like, I don't know. You have to commit to your site and stuff, but at the same time, like, people also have lives. So I've just, on a human level, I just don't think it would work out that well.
Yep. I think there's probably a really big hesitation in actually implementing something like that because I think it would do a lot to eradicate exits. I think it would definitely de-incentivize them a good majority. I could see that being a pain, though, having to send back and forth, especially with any fees that you might incur.
Yeah, just the thing is, my thing is on the reverse side. On the administrative, like, what if you have a kill switch and you lock yourself out and it's an exit scam because you can't get your funds or dispense them.
Yeah, I think you started about like if you don't log into the site, then as a buyer it would send them back to you, not necessarily as a vendor.
Oh, okay. I mean, I guess that would work.
I'd love to see that. Even kind of as a vendor, if you already had a payment address set, It would be pretty cool to see it kicked over should something happen. But again, I think we see a ton of markets that actually exit scams. So I think for me, it would be a really refreshing thing if they actually implemented something like that. It would alleviate a lot of the worry on my end if I was a buyer about an exit scam. But again, I just don't think that that's actually something that they actually would implement.
You could always try the multi-sig route.
Yeah, that's another option. Yep.
But we've seen that go to shit too, where they just take the money from the FB stuff and the central wallet and just leave the multi-sig there to rot.
Yep.
So once they're gone, they're gone.
Well, the next one that we had was by Chris, who's a longtime listener. I've seen Chris kicking around the comments for a really long time. And he said, how often is Dread's Canary updated on time, though?
Never.
Yeah. I think they've actually said, like, if it does get updated on a regular basis, that, like, that's a warning, which is, it's kind of like, well, why do you have one then? Like, what's the point of having one if updating it is the warning?
Yeah, I mean, that whole canary thing's kind of old process, stuff that used to be done. It was like when it first came out, the idea of keeping canary people, he was more on time with all that stuff. But now it's just, there's other ways to verify if they're up and who's in control. And obviously they'll do the canary, but I don't think it's precedent, like a priority.
Yeah.
Other things they'll worry about.
Yeah, no doubt. So the other question that we had was thoughts on a Telegram group for questions that can't be asked on YouTube. What are your thoughts on that, Roach?
Yeah, I just think me and you are both so busy. It would just be hard for me to go up there. Like, you can just email us. We got an email maybe like a week ago of someone asking us to go more into detail into like malware exploration and stuff. So, I mean, you can always email us and we can hit you back, but I don't know. Maybe you would want to admin that, but I just don't have the time personally.
Yeah, I just despise Telegram in general. Like, I don't like it as a platform at all. I've actually had threat actors who have been like, oh, like, use Telegram. That's crazy that you don't use Telegram. And I say to that, I'm like, it's crazy that you actually use it. I mean, you had a IMEI number. You have like kind of like centralized resource that opens you up to, I think, a lot of vulnerability, as opposed to something like having Tails on some random Wi-Fi with a randomized MAC address. I would much rather prefer to operate from something like that. And I know, like, you can install Telegram on different things, and I installed, like, on my KSAM instance, and like, I installed it, then I just never used it, just because I dislike it. I think there's so many different options out there that actually exist for either anonymous or really, really private chats that you really don't have to go to that route of such a crazy amount of centralization. But that's my thought process on it.
Yeah, those Discords and those Telegram things, you really got to be on there, because God knows if somebody may get on there and start spamming links and stuff. And if you're not really on top of it, it's just like you're just a danger to your own community and stuff as well, I would say.
Yep.
So just, you know, keep it simple and just PGP and email. That'd be fine, I would say.
Last question we have is from Cheesemongering 109, where I actually replied to him, but I totally screwed up my reply. So I told him that I would actually do another reply here. He says, see, what I don't get is these vendors talk about all these packages that they have to send. Some say 200 a day, but when you go on to markets, there's barely any traffic, even to the most well-known of vendors. Kind of makes you think these people inflate their egos with numbers. Go on a market and tell me if you find a vendor that's got more than 3 or 4 deliveries from the past week, yet alone per day. What do you think about that one, Roach?
I mean, that's more on the vendor side. Like, I have never really put packs in the mail. That's like not where my side of things. So I can't really speak to it. That would be more your expertise.
So I totally get the reluctance and like, well, this makes no sense. But one thing I would point out is, like, if I'm a vendor and I make a sale on abc.onion, right? I make a sale, I take that pack and I send it out. It's sent out. I mark it as sent. It's not actually updated publicly until the transaction goes through, right? So until you get it, you mark it as received, and that's good. So there's no real instant verification with that. Also, another thing to keep in mind is that for the amount of darknet markets a vendor's on, he might have, say, 1 or 2 sales on this market, on that market. Unlike, he might not have sales every day on market ABC, but he might have sales every day on an assortment of them. Also, the other thing to keep in mind is vendor shops and direct deals, because there's a lot of ways to skin a cat. So they might have, those numbers might actually be reflective and might actually be correct. And I classify myself as a small vendor, just pretty much solo managing everything, except for shipping packages, obviously. But even as a small vendor, I shipped out packages daily. But it's not going to be something that's necessarily reflective on the site, like I said. And then some sites, you might see sales numbers, but they're not going to be reflective on a, like, a real time basis, if that makes sense.
I've always kind of wondered that. Like, so say, like, you are shipping 200 a day, right? How is the logistics behind it? So do you have, like, stuff already pre-weighed? Say, like, we're doing weed, like, right? Do you have, like, a whole bunch of boxes already fit? You just say, like, 20, 30 half ounces. Here's 40 ounces. And here's X amount of QPs. And then, like, when the order comes in, you just slap a sticker on it. And it's just like a warehouse almost? Or, like, well, how do you get to, like, 200? And do you ship all 200 in one day?
There's so many different variables, but there's a lot of moving components. So, for example, like micro printing, where if you're using, you know, certain printers might use micro printing, where they print out logistical information about your specific setup, like your IP address or specific things about the printer in the actual printed message, which is sounds insane, but it's a real thing. If you look into it, you'll find out. But I used a thermal printer, and with the thermal printer, you just have almost like these labels, and on the labels, it prints, and basically you don't need any ink for these because it's just with temperature. So I would go in and let's say I have five things that are going out that day. I would have on each label, I would have the address of where it's going, obviously. But after those are printed up, I would keep those tabs. And on the back that doesn't actually touch the label, I would gently write whatever it was that was going out. So let's say, just for safety's sake, is like a ounce of yay, ounce of weed, ounce of X, just to make it easy. All different things, right? Going out, I could have the names on one side and then flip it over and see exactly what it was. So if I had two cannabis orders, then what I would do is I would go in, I would package up my cannabis first. So I'd put on scrubs, put on a face mask to prevent saliva, spit. I had a clean room.
Walter White it?
Yeah, well, I had a clean room that I bleached. Yeah, I had a clean room that I bleached on a regular basis. And that's important because I want to say off the top of my head, it's something like 80% or 50% of dust is a dead human skin, and skin has DNA, right? So that was one thing that I was very kind of particular on, is that everything had to be clean. And then you go in there with multiple pairs of gloves, use alcohol it up. I had these scrubs that are like sleeves that go up, like disposable sleeves that you have that go up, so I couldn't get any of my hair caught in there, because you want to have anything inside of a package that's identifiable to you. So that I go in, I package up that particular substance, package it all up, vacuum seal it, put it in a decoy bag, put it in the box, then go switch out gloves and then do the next substance and kind of keep them separated like that. And then as I'm going through, like once I finish one of the things of cannabis, I peel off the sticker and I put it on the box that it's going to. So now I know the correct amount of stuff and it's going to the right person. There's no way that can be screwed up, because once you put the substance in the box, you're putting the sticker on it and the box is sealed. And that's that. And then
very time consuming.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially when you get,
so it's like 30 minutes or something.
I mean, it depends on what you're doing and how many different things you're shipping. So like with me, I didn't have any like opiates or like meth or any of that stuff. I didn't want to sell stuff that took people's souls. So for me, I sold stuff like party drugs. So it was like acid. I guess the hardest thing I ever sold was moonshine. And the next to that, though, would probably be powder cocaine, which is probably those are the two most addictive things that I sold. Aside from that, it was like acid and powder ecstasy and cannabis, and people could argue those are like really bad too. And that's my point was for my moral, I'm getting sidetracked. After the packaging, that's when that job leaves for me and goes to her to go and distribute them all. And then I would hop back on my computer at that point and mark them all as shipped. And then she would come back with the receipts with the actual tracking numbers. So if I have an issue, I can show that I did ship it. And if someone says, I never got my package, I can actually go and review and see if it actually arrived to them. And if it didn't, then you're lying. And we can go into a dispute about it, because I can provide information to prove to some degree that I did ship it. And that's why, like, there's another video I did where I talked about, like, if you think you're going to be screwed on a purchase, the only way you can really win really well, I mean, almost guarantee to win in a fair dispute on a darknet market, is to actually film the opening of it, right? And people are like, oh, that's stupid. You're going to have all your information. Yeah, well, what do you think's going to happen when the darknet vendor provides the tracking number to the person who's dealing with the dispute? Like, your personal information is going to be there anyway. That's kind of how it works. In order to win that dispute, that kind of info has to be provided. So, but if you open it up and it's a, like you're ordering from this guy for the first time, you open it up and it's a rock, right? Like then there have been people who have gotten screwed this very way. So like there'll be vendors who selective scam, but they do send something and it's just a rock in a box or sand or some stupid like that, that weighs around the same amount. So when the tracking is actually looked at, they can be like, oh yeah, this weighs about the same as it would for that ounce of weed or whatever. And that vendor can win that dispute. But if you as the buyer, like record yourself opening it up, which again, you have to remove EXIF data. You have to try to anonymize it as much as possible. And like, yeah, and then you would use OnionShare to send it. Like people be like, oh, where do I upload it to? I'm not going to upload it to YouTube. And I'm like, no, you use OnionShare. That's kind of the purpose of it. So you use OnionShare, get the video, and then check it. That's how I would recommend never losing a dispute. But then again, there are absolutely darknet markets who are just going to screw customers over anyways. They're always going to give it to the vendor. And I've seen markets that do the opposite too, where they always give it to the buyer. So it's a tricky question to actually answer, because there's a lot of moving parts with the logistics alone. Like really, at the end of the day, going into vending, I already knew about encryption. I knew about all that kind of stuff because I had studied InfoSec for 10 or 15 years before that. What I didn't know about was the logistics. And that is what took me 6 months to actually research. Because you're not going to, like, it's very difficult to come across information that directly relates to how to efficiently ship narcotics. It's not something that's really that mainstream, especially, you know, we're talking back in the day, 2014, 2015, those early days, it just wasn't something that was really out there. So you really had to do OSINT well, gather information and try to reverse engineer how they worked, which is it's a tricky proposition for anything.
So to say though, but 200 packs a day is pretty large operation.
It sucks. That sucks. Yeah. Those are peaks though. So those would be like peaks of operation. I mean, there are other days where you're not going to have any orders. And that might be, on a holiday or something along those lines, or maybe a nice day, out. But again, for me, I only sold, nationally in the US. Okay. I wasn't an international seller. So with international selling, it's going to be a little bit more obscure, because at least when I was going through winter, everyone else that was ordering from me was going through winter. So you could kind of have guesses as to when it was going to pick up and when it wasn't. Whereas on an international level, first off, not everyone celebrates the same holidays, but also summertime's a different time on the other side of the world. So like I said, that's why I said there's a lot of variables to it. There are enough variables for me, basically, where I knew that I didn't want to have to deal with any additional variables, like trying to ship something out and get it past customs, especially if it was going to a country like Australia, which I learned a little bit about how their customs works, and it just seems like an absolute nightmare to send something in there. But again, like I never actually shipped anything there, so what do I know about it? But you do have lists of hot countries that I think Europol has all these different countries where they do annual or biannual reports on which countries are receiving and shipping narcotics. And they have like hot countries where it's like, if you're getting packages on a regular basis from the Netherlands, it's going to raise more suspicion than if you get it from a country that isn't as hot.
Like that.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Okay, well, I think that cleared a lot of that up. Like, I mean, what, 200 a day? That's a lot. You never know. Like, I never know. I thought they could have like a bunch of workers, or if it's like a two man. That's a one man job, man. You're backing boxes literally all day.
Yeah. Well, you're getting up at 5 or 6, and you're going through your orders and you're doing it in piecemeal. So you're going through your orders, you're finding X amount that you feel comfortable with, you're printing those out, writing out what it is that's going out so that you have that accuracy. And then you're going upstairs, packaging them all up, bringing the boxes down, and then you're marking them all as shipped, and then you're going to do your next batch. And that's pretty much how it works. And then they get shipped out, and then it's just it's a waiting game. But as you're waiting, you're hopping in the forums and you're having discussions with other people. You're maybe setting up another profile on another darknet market. Like, there's so much stuff to do to stay busy that it's very rare that you're going to be able to take a break. Like, I think, honestly, I think I absolutely worked harder as a darknet vendor than I have a lot of the jobs, like the actual 9-to-5s that I had in life, which is crazy. But the nice thing with the 9-to-5 is, like, it was 9-to-5. With being a darknet vendor, it's kind of like it's constant, and it was like almost never enough hours in the day. And then, like, you start off, when I started off and I got like one or two sales in a week. And the only reason I did that well was because I had established my name in the community that I was in. I did that by doing like tech support and giving OPSEC advice and stuff like that. So I'd already had a name there. And when I started vending, I was already kind of trusted to a certain point. That's making 5,000 posts in a month. That'll happen. So, like, when I got to that point of where I actually became a vendor, I had people who were willing to buy off me almost off rip. For other vendors, that's not the case. They might have to do a special where they just slash prices way low, practically give away product to be able to get reviews. But everyone works in a different way, especially for like a small vendor like myself, where like it's like, why should someone buy from me if they can buy from someone, like if I'm selling cannabis, right? Why buy from me over the guy who maybe has, I don't know, 50 acres in Cali and pounds and pounds and pounds of cannabis, and he can sell it for absolutely dirt cheap. And like trying to compete with those, like that level of people, you have to find a way to define yourself. And for me, really, it was just customer service and being willing and able to answer questions. And there's days where I'd spend 8 hours sending just PMs to people to respond to their questions. Well, how do you grow this? And I would answer those questions, and I would answer them to the best of my ability. And if they send follow-up questions, I try to answer them. Because I know as a buyer, when I started doing resale, because for the longest time, I wasn't doing resale. I was actually making everything. When I started doing resale, because I had a quicker turnover, which makes sense, then I would do the same thing. I would ask a vendor a question before I ordered for them and just see how long it took them to respond. And whoever was the fastest, he went at the top of the list. And then the list of like top five, whoever had the best price would end up getting that first sale. And then we'd just continue that. And that's how I went about it anyway.
Well, that's what's up. So yeah, I think that answers all my questions about it. Like, I've never, and so it's a lot of work.
Yeah, it's crazy, man. But that's why, like, I tell people, like, if you can do that, or even if you have the mental capacity to be able to plan something like that, go start a real business. Because at the end of the day, like, as a darknet vendor, if you get busted, you're going to lose all the money you made. The feds are going to take. So it's like, if you have assets, if you bought a house, if you bought a car, let's say you bought a car when you're working a construction job and you pivot into doing this. You bought the car with the construction salary, though. What's going to happen is they're going to be like, oh, you have this asset, this car. You need to prove to us that you didn't obtain this with the proceeds from that crime.
Right.
And if you don't, they'll just take it. But the burden of proof is on you. We're typically, the burden of proof for guilt or innocence is typically on the state or on the feds. But with things like asset forfeiture, at one point or another, I don't know if they reversed it yet, but it was on the individual to prove that they bought it legitimately, which is a big burden for someone, especially if you're being held on bond, or if you don't have any bond. Like, how do you prove that? You can't get access to your records. So you better hope you have a good lawyer and that he's going to be willing to put that footwork in. But again, that's not always the case. The system is set up to win. It's like playing chess with someone whose all their pawns are queens. It's an analogy that I'll forever use because it absolutely makes sense in that context. But anyways, like one thing I want to address, kind of shifting gears to something that you're much more of a subject matter expert in, was a recent article that actually came out on Darknet Discussions, which, and for those of you listening, I'm basically showing on screen an article on Darknet Discussions titled "Exploring Darknet Phishing Tactics, Evil User Tool." Do you want to, and for the record, like this is not me actually typing this out. This site is exclusively managed by Roach. So do you want to like give some background on that and tell us what that is? And this this YouTube video, you want to tell us what's going on that?
Okay, so it's like, I handle most of the news stuff on Darknet Discussions, and there was kind of like a uproar or something about a lot of, I guess, like my past on this subject, phishing, and I made no qualms about it in the past. Like I've totally said it before in a couple episodes. Like I used to be like the Omar Little of the Darknet, and when I would come, I'm putting belt to ass and I'm wrecking shop. So now that I'm like coming out as legitimate, and I'm going to start trying to do the talks, like we're going to shoot for DEF CON and maybe a couple B-sides. But I just wanted to put out there, and this is like a very basic, how does phishing look like? And how do you do it specifically on the dark net? So this is one tool that I created and coded, and it was inspired by Evil URL, which I used too, which back in the day when people would be like, oh, I copied the link from Dread from dark, that was dark.fail, or I copied each street from here, and they would put it in a browser and it would resolve into a different domain. So with Evil User, what I'm doing is I'm using Unicode and sending special chars to mimic usernames. Why would somebody want to do that? Well, say there's different types of phishing, right? Not everything is just like, oh, come click on this link and come to my site. You could do it different ways to achieve different goals, right? So this one, you can clone, pretty much kind of clone, make your name look like, when I say clone, make your name look like users, a vendor. You can make a vendor name and go ahead and send messages pretending you're being them or staff. So like on the video I showed, you know, I made a couple name of staff, and then even all the way up to admin. So if it works for one, it works for all. So what you could do is what I used to like to do. I'm doing another video too on how to do this, how to get vendors this way. I used to, you use the admin and then send out messages pretending you're being him, like asking for money or asking him to click this or so and so and so. So it was just showcasing the tool on how to clone users. And so most darknets are not vulnerable to this, but some are. Especially if they're like the if the admins and stuff come from like Eastern Bloc countries and stuff where they have it in their characters or they're typing like on their keyboard or something. You can still get it. It's an old trick, but it's a good one.
No doubt. That looks interesting. It's cool that you get the resources for it on GitHub, and on top of that, the actual YouTube video for it. So yeah, thank you for that.
Yeah. It's on the Darknet Discussions page, but I'm going to move it to the a page I'm going to set up just for Roaches. But yeah, it's on the GitHub. And what did you say?
It definitely looked interesting. It's an interesting use case. The fact that it still works is also pretty crazy. but it's always nice seeing tools come out that are specific to the darknet, more or less. That's one of the things that I think I appreciated about it the most.
know if I'm going to put the video out, but like you can, how to like spearfish vendors or use an evil URL for like .su or like Roman, Russian type stuff. You can still pass characters, and evil URL works for .su's. The domains, now they put an end to it. Like the evil URL, that was hot, man, for like 2006 all the way up to, I'm going to say like 2020, when they, like all the domains were like, we're done putting these, let these characters, or we're done with emoji domains. And then that kind of put an end to that tool, but you can still use it for other things. And that's what I took that tool and made it into something where you can go around parading as your favorite admins.
Yeah, that's great.
Your favorite site.
I'm sure the other thing that I had, I wanted to bring up, and I wanted to hear your opinion on. I don't really agree with everything that's in it, but that's cool. Like we can absolutely disagree on certain stuff. But the other one that I saw was a post that was specifically on Dread, and the title of it, this is fairly interesting. So it's about, you know, Dread becoming a scamming shithole. One thing I will say is that I have noticed with Dread from its inception, which was right after the death of Darknet Markets on Reddit. Maybe it's just in my head, but it just seems like a pretty steep decline in post quality that's happened over the years. And I was missing for a little bit of that, but it seems like there was kind of a drop in the actual quality, where it just seems like a lot of noobs now, and a lot of not really useful information. There's like, there are people like Head Janitor who put out real quality when they post. It's one thing, one of the users that I absolutely enjoy seeing post is him. But aside from that, there's really not like dedicated users that I personally know of that I enjoy seeing every single post there's. But it seems like there's a lot more immaturity now than there was 6 years ago. To me personally, as being someone who's been there for a long time, your thoughts, like specifically this article, like what motivated you to write this article, for example?
Well, like I said, during the discussions, like I took off the market links part of it. So there's no market links and stuff. And I'm going to just try to talk about the darknet from a different light. So like on darknet discussions, we've been trying to do different types of articles. So like, if you noticed, I've removed the market links to just get away. So it's just like a different type of site. So I just wanted to cover.
So one of the interesting parts that I saw, and I had had a discussion with Sam Whiskey, who is the one who's responsible specifically for the super list, which for those of you that don't know, the super list basically is a list of markets that are seen as reputable. They've met certain criteria to say that they're reputable to some degree on Dread. And of course, nobody is actually saying that they're never going to do anything bad, because all markets end up leaving gracefully or not gracefully. But there's certain standards that are met that people tend to look at the super list with some form of regard and respect for. A section that was inside of your article talked about how the super list was a scam, which I found interesting. Could you like elaborate on that and kind of explain why you think the super list specifically is a scam?
I mean, for example, like, why is it even a thing when 98% of the markets exit?
It's a great point.
I feel like in the past, when it first started, where it was more libertarian and hippy dippy and stuff like that, markets were able to compete. And what I see with the super list, and since its inception, it doesn't help anybody. You can't look to it and say, oh, it helped people here because it stopped an exit scam.
Yep.
Or it's stopped this, right? So when we talk about it, I'm saying it's the biggest scam of them all. And I'm just saying this out of experience. I'm telling you out of experience, they have these market standards, which they clearly don't follow. Like the way that's to get on there and who picks it, it makes it a really hard thing to trust. If all the markets that's gone on there are exit scamming and people are getting picked, like who can go on there and who can't, right? Because that's the whole thing of the supermarket is what's the, other than gatekeeping, and there's money. Like that's the thing people don't understand. There's a lot of money in the back. So I've talked to admins. There was one thing where you talked to him, the same whiskey. And he said, yep, he goes off popularity, which you can, that's complete bullshit. Because if that was the truth, Torizon, who has over 1,000 subscribers on their sub dread, would be on. But I know for a fact they got kept off because the admin, well, Paris told me the admin, and then who's it, Hourglass or someone said Sam Whiskey was annoyed. And when you ask Hugbunner, he's like, I don't pay attention to markets until they're on the super list. So here, that's a good example. Another one was Black Pyramid. Paris banned Black Pyramid. Everybody thinks it's a scam site because Treads doesn't like the admin. They're operating for over 4 years now, haven't gone anywhere. You haven't seen anything saying that they're a scam. Versus these markets where just like there's that tie, like I said, with the White House in Paris. We could pull up all kinds of stuff where he let white DDoS markets openly. People, he can let them talk crazy. As some market admins are allowed to just freely make up whatever. Versus like you, like a user, if a user said whatever, they would ban them.
Yeah, there's a lot of truth in that. Yeah, there's a lot of stuff where, like, if there's a lot of stuff that if I said it on Dread instead of YouTube, I think absolutely I would get banned. Yeah, whereas like, yeah, I can see that. Yeah, that's a good argument.
That's the reason why all of this has gone down fucking hill, man. It's just this whole gatekeeping, who can come in and make money, who can't. Like Drug Hub got to skip the list, right? Even though White House exit scammed completely, they allow them to bring it back, say, oh, buy White House market, even though they exit scammed. It's because he's cool with Paris. Paris let him skip the line while these other markets in the back fighting. It's an uphill battle. And then Fish Market.
Yep.
Torizon has been around longer than Fish Market. And Fish Market got to jump the line because he's cool with Sam Whiskey, and Fish Market was Monkey Market. It was the same build, same everything, and I know the admin. Cool with Sam Whiskey, lets them jump in, boom, another operating for 4 months exit scam. And I mean, and I just know, and you can see it. If you put all the stuff in a data set and look at it, you'll see that the super list has never saved anybody. And the sole purpose is gatekeeping. Who can make money? Who are we cool with? Who have we worked with before? Even though we know this market's exit scammed, it's not good for the community, but we're going to let them come back on here. It just makes no sense. And then you have a crazy, and then there's an archetype admin. It says right here, negative, immature. But I know that's a negative to keep them off, right? I know I'm saying a lot, guys, people out there that's listening, this is the best way I can explain it. It's a scam. This whole thing's a scam. It's Dread has had the privilege of being able to control the information. And all I'm just saying is just like the shit sucks. Don't listen to it. Try to find alternative stuff. But to just, you know, hanging on Dread to save you, it's not the way, because they're making money if the thing exit scams or not. Like I was talking to Hugbunner before I put this out, and they're obviously mad at me or whatever, but he was saying on Dawn that he was going to take everything, take all the listing aloft at the ask for advertisement and banners. It's just like, dude, that's fucking weird because you guys ask advertisement and banners. Right? And he's like, oh, that's for server hosting. Yeah. I'm like, dude, everybody else got server hosting. And it's because some listing thing asked Abacus $5,000 to be listed.
Yep.
That's what it is. If you're a big market, you want to come up on my shit and I give you a price, right? And you don't like the price and you go rug the hug bunner and he's just like, well, everybody's making money but us. And that's the thing. That's why Dot got set up. Tor.taxi. They were doing good. So Dark.fail is gone. So they got to go goop up and corner that shit. And you'll notice, yep. Right? only use our products. Only use Dot. Only use Recon. Only use the super list. So it's just like funneling all these people into this fucking circus of exit scams and da-da-da. It's bullshit. And that's why the darknet markets and the whole scene is completely trash. And then you talked in the, like, yep. I put a post, a picture asking Sam Whiskey about the thing and just like talking to the guy who runs it. And the guy's just full of shit, dude. He just can't get a straight answer. The thing's not transparent. And with everybody being so decentralized this, decentralized that, for someone preaching so much decentralization, there's so much centralization. Yep. And it's crap. And that's the reason why this whole thing's trash. And you can look at Bitcoin or Wikipedia for different ways on trying to how to get things listed instead of put the things who can get up on here and make money in the hands of a few people.
So do you have, like, if you were to give advice for like an alternate to Dread, what would be like your suggestion for an alt?
I mean, right now there really isn't one. I mean, there's Pitch.
Yeah, Pitch is great. Yeah, I like Pitch. I know there's a lot of people that kind of complain about it, but I'm definitely a fan of it. I think I also like the fact that they allow, as a content creator, I like to obviously share pictures and other media just besides text. And, like, you know, that's another kind of an interesting facet too. Dread obviously has a very large base to it, but how resource intensive is it for a site if it's all text based? I mean, I've never had to own or manage a site like he specifically has that's that size. So I don't know, but that's a question that I think is interesting. The fact that it's a text only website. It's not like there's pictures being uploaded or video.
It's about money. And then, like, and then the article too, I go into the pneumonia and the self help hotline scam, where it's the lead. Okay. So there's this guy on the self-help section of Dread. He scammed, apparently, Drug Hub admin, Archetype. Of course, he's getting scammed. Everybody that donated to him. And he goes and takes in thousands and thousands of dollars, right? Goes around on Dread. He was the top donor of Dread for that month. So this guy's going around scamming everybody off Dread and then baiting them to, hey, match my donations and doing this, right? And if you look at the guy, he got banned, but they also scrubbed all of his stuff because they don't want people to see that, yeah, this guy was the top donor. So Dread took in all this money from the scam off donations. No, it was a scam. Banned him and just cut it dead. There's no refunding everybody who got money. I bet you, like, maybe the market admin's got it because there's a hierarchy.
So the last thing, I think the last article that I had, I don't know, the second to last article that I had was one that had an interesting title, and I started reading it and it kind of surprised me that there was no like any kind of safety checks whatsoever. It also surprised me to see that the listing had actually gotten like over 3,000 views alone, which was absolutely insane. But it was called Archetype's Growing Problem, Fent, and we'll just say cheese pizza, basically. I'm sure everyone watching or listening knows exactly what we're talking about. Without getting into too much grotesque detail, could you tell us about what this was and what happened because of it? Like, how this is even possible on a darknet market that is the largest one in the world?
Right. So, like I said, we're trying to do different type of things over here at the new section of Darknet Discussions. And I wanted to try a different style of reporting, which is one I see a lot. Like, I see a lot of big YouTubers do it, which is, I call it the point and shoot, where they pick up like an article and show the post and stuff and just talk about what the post was. So I was going along and just seeing it. So somebody posted that there were some certain listings, the cheese pizza, and you'd find them under the other tabs, things that don't fit nowhere else. So at the time, I checked the links, and there was not only one, but like three other openly kind of posts like this. I think since they've been called out, they've taken them down. The fence still up.
It's good to hear that they actually took it down. I mean, you would have thought that they would have some kind of moderation behind it that would have caught it, instead of having to have people actually tell them, hey, there's this listing up that you guys completely missed, and there's no moderation, and there's no kind of actually checks to what people are listing. That's nuts.
I mean, letting fentanyl and cheese pizza flood your market, that's not only reckless, it's pretty suicidal. You're basically signing your own life sentence. And the fact that they don't do any moderating whatsoever, it's just like make money at any cost. And trust, I tried to talk to the admin to see if he had anything to say about it, and the usual threats and aggravation and this. He can't even control his own thing. So,
yeah, that's crazy. I mean, it's unfortunate too that it has to, you know, take such a crazy turn that at the end of the day, man, you can't just accept, instead of flipping out and worrying about talking constantly on Dread and never shutting up, that you don't just handle your business, handle your market, make sure stuff like that doesn't happen, instead of trying to grab followers and a bunch of nonsense on what's equivalent to a Reddit. That's absolutely crazy to me.
Dude's been tripping for a long time.
Yeah, I agree.
He's just been on some shit.
Well, the final thing that and I don't expect you to go into this in detail, but the whole 20 questions with Ghost Express of Canna Express, which apparently is a new market. Without obviously telling us the whole interview, you want to tell us like the gist of it and how you guys hooked up?
Well, I went to the new markets, and I hit most of them up. The ones that I think I looked at them, and the ones that I think they have some sort of future. And I just sent them 20 questions, and whoever it answered them. So this guy from the Canna Express, which I do love myself a good weed market, by the way, he answered them. So he answered them, and I read the answers, and then I started talking to him, and found out the guy's actually like really chill and intelligent. I asked him the hardest questions I could ask, and got really thoughtful response. And the guy seemed like he knows what he's doing. So that's just the thing we're gonna start doing every time and time again. I'll find a new up and coming market and then ask him questions just to see. We're trying to do all kinds of different types of angles and stuff over at Darknet Discussions. What did you think of it?
Yeah, I liked it. I thought it was cool. I thought it was cool grabbing a interview with an admin right off the bat, as soon as a market actually comes out, and being able to show that back to people in just textual form is great. And I think it's great for, if nothing else, historical purposes to be able to have that and show it off.
Right. The guy seems really smart from when I talked to him. I think the market is going to be long lasting. And this, it doesn't have like fit and any drugs or cheese pizza on it.
How sad is that you have to put like a disclaimer in there?
I mean, it's that just when you're, I mean, the thing is, it's just like, I feel like, especially with the weed markets, it's less risky. They're not going to have the incentive to cut and run like a scent market would or something.
One of the closer to the last things that I wanted to cover was that. And this is going to be a really quick one, is basically that we have Pitch, their anniversary happened, their 1 year anniversary. I meant to actually cover this a while ago, but I didn't actually get to it. So I just wanted to kind of give Pitch a shout out and point out that they exist, that it's a thing. And I personally like the site. I think it's a pretty awesome site. I love the fact that I can go there and I can upload thumbnails, for example, of my videos. And I find it to be a ton of, it's actually a lot more positive than the constant whining and complaining and just nonstop arguing. That's so toxic. It's basically just completely toxified dread, in my opinion. I hop on to check PMs and that's about it now.
Yeah, I mean, it is refreshing. And also, too, it's somebody that's doing something positive that's breaking up the monopoly of information that Dread holds. I just think anybody doing anything alternative and doing it upright shows that you don't really need Dread and their cohorts to tell you this is where you go and this and that. So the fact that they're doing something and they're doing it up, and I think it looks a really good site. I go on there from time to time.
Yeah, seriously, happy birthday, guys. And again, we're sorry it took so long to actually come out with that. But so the last thing, the second to last thing that I had was a post that was basically talking about fish market exit scamming or Go Fish or whatever it was, they ended up rebranding it to.
The main admin, who used to be Monkey from Monkey Market, that he was the admin on there. But the guy, Bai, who made the post and stuff, he's a really cool guy. So it was cool to blow the whistle on it. But it just goes to show these, and it was a relatively short-lived market, like supermarket, right? Where you get on the super list and it does nothing for the people.
Yep.
At all. So that was one of the markets that made it on the super list. And once again, nothing but people holding their hands out because they got their money taken.
And wasn't it like put on the super list and then it like exit scammed pretty fairly shortly after that?
It was on the super list for a couple months. I know that you're supposed to be like up and running for like 6 months.
Yep.
But there's connections and stuff. And again, they made it on there before Torzon or even a couple like Nexus Market. Those are really good, healthy markets. The admins are solid. And here we go. But that's the thing. It's just, I alluded to it earlier. Somebody's at the top of making money and it's not.
Yeah, someone's getting paid. Yeah.
And someone's getting paid to fuck everybody over. And it's 99% of y'all. It's not y'all. So that's just the thing. But yeah, we'll probably see a reiteration of it coming back and you put back up on there.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt.
It was a quick lick.
But yeah, I mean, so that's what we have for you in this episode. I hope you guys enjoyed it. It was great coming back and we're going to try to get on a regular schedule again. And I'm going to try to not get distracted. But thank you guys so much for your patience. Thank you for the comments, too. We love hearing back from you. And you can take it away, Roach.
Yeah, thanks for the emails. I've been getting a lot of emails and stuff. And also, if you want to, we're crowdsourced. So I'm going to put a donation. We can do the donations now. We're going to do it on Darknet Discussions. And I think also Sam has donations on his YouTube page. So if you guys would like to donate, that'd be awesome. And thank you for everything.